Port Townsend Film Festival 2018, filmmaker interviews here on KPTZ. I'm Larry Stein. Thanks for being with us. This is the first of three programs featuring directors of significant films in the Port Townsend Film Festival this year. The festival runs from September 21st through 23rd. Every year here on KPTC, we offer you interviews ahead of the festival with significant filmmakers about important films in the festival. This program will feature Afghan Cycles, a documentary about women and bicycles in Afghanistan. And we'll follow that with a conversation with the performers and composers of a soundtrack for a classic Buster Keaton movie, Steamboat Bill Jr. First, Afghan Cycles, with your host, Chris Wilson.
Women riding bicycles has been an important moment in many different countries where it's giving women more independence and ability to go out and work. So just the idea that it would still be controversial here in Afghanistan for women to do that is a challenge.
I'm one of your Port Townsend Film Festival hosts here at KPTZ. My name is Chris Wilson, and today I'm going to be talking with the director of a 2018 hot doc, Sarah Menzies. The movie is called Afghan Cycles. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
So tell us about how you became involved with this movie.
I found out about the national team based in Kabul, who turns out to be one of the main teams that we follow through the film. I found out about them back in 2013 by a friend and colleague, Shannon Galpin, who was a producer on the film. She found out about this cycling team that was just starting to take shape there. And we met for coffee, and basically she said, what do you say we head over there and see what this team is like and see if there's a film there? A few months later, I guess spring of 2013, we went out there to meet them, and I anticipated this being a short film like many of the films I'd done up to that point in my career. But gosh, meeting them and understanding the context and backdrop in which they're needing to ride within, I realized that this was a much larger story that I wanted to see unfold in a longer format.
I can say that all of us following the news from Afghanistan find it a very frightening, a place where you can hardly believe it's possible to live under any circumstance. I had the opportunity to see the movie, and this follows these brave young Afghan women cyclists. They're not only fighting cultural barriers and oppression, but even death threats. Tell us more about how the bicycle becomes a vehicle for social change.
Thank you for each layer of that question. I think you said it so perfectly that just living there, you're living in constant threat just being an Afghan no matter what, especially now, even more so than when we started this film in 2013. It's gotten much worse over the last few years. When that's your starting point, just to get to work and to go to school, you know, that you're at risk by being at the wrong place at the wrong time is already scary enough. So adding this other layer to it by going against culture norms and getting on a bicycle obviously opens the door for much more risk in an already scary place. And I think for me, it started as just seeing what these women were doing and seeing the bravery it took to ride a bicycle. It's inherently a sport that has to be public. I mean, you could ride on a stationary bike in a gym, but let's admit it, we all get on a bicycle because we want the freedom and the independence and to feel the wind on our face. Mm-hmm. And so it's inherently public what they're doing. So for me, it really started as that, just showing that feeling of being on a bicycle. But really, as we started talking about it more, and also as I was researching it more behind the scenes, the bicycle has played a huge role, certainly in our own women's suffrage movement here in the States. It was an affordable vehicle that men and women can use to get around and run errands efficiently and get to school safely and all of that. And so for women to fight for that and to be able to have that same kind of access to independence is really what we were drawing upon more so than maybe the competitive edge. You know, some of the characters want to compete on the international level, but I think what kept my interest and what was most compelling to me is just at the core of it, the bicycle gives you freedom and independence, and you don't have to rely on someone else to get around. And I think that's a universal message that we're trying to really share in the story of these women.
I didn't think of that. The Victorian women in their long skirts and their corsets.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a parallel to the kind of clothing.
It's what changed our clothing. Yes. You know, women couldn't do that in those big dresses. They had to start wearing pants. It just everything started to shift as more women started to ride the bike. But along with that, there was always this sexual connotation of putting something between your legs. And a lot of what Western women faced 100 plus years ago, we're seeing these women in Afghanistan face the same sort of backlash.
Mm-hmm. We met a lot of really fascinating people in this film, but you chose to really focus on one or two of the girls. Can you introduce them?
Yeah, I believe that perhaps our main character that you're thinking of is Frozan. Mm-hmm. And the second I met her, I just knew she was my little sister in every possible way. There was just an instant bond. She just has this twinkle in her eye, and she's hilarious and resilient. Truth be told, though, for the 5 years that we were on production with this film, we were following each of their lives to the same degree we did with Frozan. And so this film could have taken so many different directions as each woman was faced with some sort of adversity. Any one of these women could have been our main character. Mm-hmm. But Frozan made a very impulsive decision in 2016 to leave Afghanistan and leave on her way to a training camp, which ends up being a huge twist in our story. And that, again, was impulsive. She was facing risks at home, you know, death threats against herself and her family. Mm-hmm. And she made a decision that this was the only way she could save her family and still do this passion of riding a bicycle. I can't honestly say that there's something that I care that much about that I would risk it all to keep doing it. And I think it's that type of passion that not only kept me going back to Afghanistan to film with these women and continue to get to know them, to share their story, but for Frozan in particular, I just knew this is the heart of it, like really risking it all to continue doing what she loves.
Right.
And so that all kind of came out in the post-production, you know, as that happened and we were working on the edit, she certainly rose to the top as our main character as we continued to follow her after she made that decision.
Mm-hmm. She was not only a strong competitor, but, you know, she was so close to one of the other girls that was also right at the top of the team. I won't reveal because I want everybody to go see this movie and look for it. It's called Afghan Cycles, and go to Afghan Cycles on the website and find out more about it. So these were the girls in Kabul who became part of the National Afghan Women's Cycling Team. But then you went out to rural Afghanistan. And so why did you decide to go to Bamiyan?
You know, we started to this national team by 2015, they'd been getting a lot of press, both in country and internationally. So they really were encouraging women all over the country to get on bicycles. You know, they were an example of what women could do. We heard about this team out in Bamiyan, and I was thinking, let's just go meet them, and you know, we'll see. It's kind of how we started this whole film. We'll just see if this will work in or not.
Mm-hmm.
And once we got out there and saw, like, gosh, there are so many women out here riding, to me, they represent more of this cultural shift to just ride bicycles the way that men and boys do in the country, whereas our Kabul team represented more of the competitive goals and aspirations. I liked being able to counterbalance those two themes of competition and, in my mind, sort of a cultural shift. But then in that also see rural and urban differences in Afghanistan. I think it shows just another side of the country that we end up hearing. We really hear about all the bad things that happen, which are very true and real, and we need to acknowledge that. But there's also a lot of beautiful things happening and beautiful countryside and supportive families that want their daughters to do this kind of thing. And so Bamiyan really gave us a chance to get out of the city, take a breath of fresh air, both on production and hopefully when you're watching the film, to just show kind of this juxtaposition of city versus rural lifestyle.
I want to say to the people listening that this is an incredibly beautiful film. Not only the
thank you,
the women that are involved, but the colors, the landscape, the mosque. I think it's a very inspiring and beautiful film. It is not a dark film at all. And also, in the countryside, you went to the site of the destruction of the two Buddhas.
Yeah, gosh. Well, Zara, who's the woman out there that started the team and kind of brought cycling to women in Bamiyan, she studies archaeology, and that was such a cool experience to be able to walk through those ruins with her. It sort of felt like having this professional explain it to mm-hmm. us as she was taking us through these different caves, because she's spent the last few years studying them intimately. So that was a really nice insight that we wanted to be able to kind of share Zara's passion for this while also explaining the history of that region. They've certainly been affected and continue to be affected by the Taliban, and they have this constant reminder, literally as a centerpiece of their community, that you can't be in Bamiyan and not see it. You know, it's just this constant reminder. And I felt like to be able to see it through her eyes as this next generation hoping for a better future was, not that we want to try and add a positive spin to something negative. I guess it's more of a hopeful for the future kind of spin that we were aiming for in getting that tour with her. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty surreal to be there and, you know, really think back, gosh, centuries ago when those Buddhas were erected to then, you know, not too long ago when they were destroyed.
By the Taliban, yeah. Just completely blown
yeah.
up.
Yeah, yeah.
So you also had an interview with a mullah. And I found him very sympathetic, because even though, you know, you introduced it by saying culturally for girls to ride bicycles, it was bad and shameful. He was trying to find a way, I think.
Yeah.
He was, you know, saying, well, as long as they're dressed appropriately and they don't ride in public, could they just go yeah. somewhere where no one can see them? It was
it's nice to hear you say that. Yeah, he's not a bad man, and no. I don't want him to come across as that.
No.
And he is a progressive mullah. That just shows how complicated this is and what they're really up against. That, yes, they have his support, but it comes with these terms. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these things that really do limit them if they really wanted to pursue any sort of competitive goals. But, yeah, I hope that came across, that mm-hmm. that he represents kind of this culture and tradition that they face. Not so much he's the bad guy that's holding them back, but he does, you know, he is a man of tradition and wants to be sure that these women stick to that.
We're talking to Sarah Menzies, and she's the director of the Port Townsend Film Festival showing of Afghan Cycles is the name of the movie. And during the film festival, there's going to be a special bicycling event with yeah. one of the producers, Anna Bronaise. And on Sunday, September 23rd at 8:00, go to the American Legion Hall and meet Anna for a 1-hour ride.
And if you, Sarah.
And you. Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh,
okay.
I'll definitely be there.
And, that's great. And it won't be too hard. Everybody can join in. And there's prizes and film festival passes. So yeah. join these wonderful women and find out more about Afghan Cycles. And
yeah. We'll have a nice early morning ride and be able to end it with a screening of the film.
That's
so
right.
It'll be a great way to celebrate the film and the story. Yeah.
I hope to meet you there. Thanks so much.
Yeah, me too, Chris. Thank you so much.
ارس است مگم ترس است مگم بیمه است وحشت است میفهمن که در پشت ما یک گپ است.
Afghan Cycles screens Friday at 6 p.m. at the Cotton Building, Sunday at 9 a.m. at the American Legion Hall. And as you heard, there'll be a bike in ahead of the screening, and you can come on your bike to see Afghan Cycles. KPTZ 91.9 FM Port Townsend. Film Festival coverage for Port Townsend Film Festival 2018. A special feature of the festival this year is a one-time screening of a classic silent film, Steamboat Bill Jr., starring, of course, Buster Keaton, one of his most iconic roles. The Port Townsend Film Festival had a great friend in Frank Buxton, a veteran entertainer who goes back to the days of silent films. He sadly passed away. And in his honor, there is going to be a screening of Steamboat Bill Jr. with live accompaniment and performance by Dave Keenan and Nova Devaney, also known as Miles and Karina. I went over as they were getting ready for this performance coming up on Saturday, and I got a little preview of their approach to contributing sound to a film from 1928. Dave Keenan.
Nova and I were asked to perform our score to Steamboat Bill for Frank Buxton's 86th birthday party. We did it at the beautiful theater on Bainbridge Island at the museum there. So that's the connection. And since he passed away, and it's a good friend and promoter of the Port Townsend Film Festival, we were asked by the film festival to do our same score for its 2018 performance.
Nova, the two of you have sort of developed one of your subspecialties is doing soundtracks for films. Just give me a little capsule version of how that developed.
All right. Well, it started when we put out our second CD as Miles and Karina, and we were actually doing a pseudo house concert on Vashon, and someone in the audience, whose name is Liz Shepherd, heard us play and said, "Oh, your music is so cinematic. Have you ever thought of doing some scores for films?" And that has been a dream of ours for a long time. And I'd have to say we do scores and not yet really soundtracks, because I'd say soundtracks are once it's actually applied to a film. But that's our hope in the future. However, playing live is also extremely special. So she was involved with the Northwest Film Forum and commissioned us to do a score for their, well, the first one we did, I think, was 2008, a Children's Film Festival, which happens early in the year. And that's when we did our first one, which was The Adventures of Prince Ahmed.
Which is a rather obscure film, right? Where did that film come from? I know it's played around. You've performed it around.
It's the oldest surviving animated feature-length film. It's from 1926. Is that the year it came out?
Yeah.
Lotte Reiniger was the artist who did all the paper cutouts for it, and it's quite beautiful, quite amazing. Yeah.
So you're making the differentiation that you do a live performed score. You don't do a soundtrack that gets attached to the film. That your specialty now is really performing a score to these films live. They're almost all silent films.
And if they aren't silent, we turn the sound off.
Some films deserve that. You know? You'd be better with a soundtrack. Yeah.
I guess that's sort of a joke.
So what we're going to see at the film festival on Saturday is one of Buster Keaton's most famous films, Steamboat Bill Jr., and it has some of the landmark and kind of iconic images that they always show when they talk about Buster Keaton and the amazing planning and choreography of this, of the physical stunts that he does. But it's from 1928, I think, and it's a silent film with a long story, punctuated by some amazing physical comedy bits. But overall, it's a story about a young man who comes to meet his estranged father, who's Steamboat Bill Sr., and Steamboat Bill Jr. is a lot shorter and a lot frumpier than his macho father. And you must have fun dealing with that contrast.
Did you say frumpier?
Frumpier.
Oh, no, he's much more well-dressed.
Well, yes, Steamboat Bill Jr. comes from college, and he's dressed in his tweed jacket, and he's got his ukulele, and he's a man of the 20s, and his father is a man of the 1890s, probably, you know. Yeah, so they have very different styles, and he's hoping that Steamboat Bill Jr. will be just like him, but of course he's not.
Very, very, very different.
Yes. He doesn't measure up, as I like to say.
But, you know, like in all good films, he there's a growth period, and he comes out at the end as something of a hero.
Absolutely, and that is really the beauty of the film, is that by the end, Buster Keaton's character is the hero of the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned hats, and there's an early scene that has to do with getting the right hat, because when Buster Keaton as Steamboat Bill Jr. meets his father, he's wearing a very, very sophisticated French beret. And all of these guys who work in the along the docks on the steamboats, and they have their straw hats, and the French beret won't cut it. And his father, who begrudgingly admits that, well, I guess this is my son, wants him to dress right.
Yes, and there is a great scene where he's trying on several hats, and it's an amazing scene. And if you keep your eyes open, you'll see at one point Buster puts on his classic the hat that he's famous for, and quickly looks in the mirror and sees it on him and pulls it off really quickly. It's a funny little sight gag for the people in the know.
Characters like Buster Keaton, just like Charlie Chaplin, they're known for their signature outfits, and that kind of squashed hat that he wears was Buster Keaton's hat. And it's funny to see it in the middle of this parade of weird hats.
Hilarious, yes.
Yeah, but now I understand you mentioned something that you actually have a segment of your soundtrack that accompanies that. And I think you said you had a sample of it for us.
Yeah, so when we write, we put titles to all the melodies, and the section there is actually called Father's Disappointing Hat. And you'll hear a little clip of that. ¶¶
So that film is an hour and 7 minutes long, I think. So that is a marathon performance for you nonstop. There's no breaks.
That's true. Yeah, they really are. And the last 15 minutes of the film is this great, a storm blows in, and it's just a crazy, crazy 15 minutes. And we looked at that many times thinking, how are we going to score this? So we actually opted not to. And at the end, we have some little tunes that we'll play in the middle of it, but mostly it's sound effects because it's such a crazy, as the wind comes in, the storm, things are crashing. So,
well, when you say sound effects, then you have recorded sound effects that you use?
No, we make them on our instruments.
Yes.
Right. Just like radio sound effects.
Yeah, absolutely.
People. Yeah, boy, there's a lot of wind and a lot of rain.
Accordion's good for crashing, frightening sounds. As well as beautiful ones.
Yeah.
There's a little part where the scene is changing and there's like little bits of rain coming down. And so just little sounds like that. And then there's like, you know, crashing. When things are starting to lean over and...
There's some major house destruction on it.
Right. Yeah, I mean... Not the way I normally play, but it's really fun.
Yeah, and on the viola, I just kind of use the bow in such a way that it kind of goes... I make those sorts of sounds when it's crashing or things like that.
Sure, and you see this house coming apart board by board and beam by beam, and of course that's the sound that it would make.
Yeah. Exactly. I always think of viola when I see buildings crashing.
From what you're saying, you developed kind of themes for different sections of the film because there are some very nice kind of set pieces. You know, there's a whole thing in the jailhouse where he's dealing with his father who's in the jailhouse. And
Well, we watch the film many, many times when we start. And we make basically a numbered storyboard for ourselves of different scenes or particular events that happen. And in the scenes, we usually come up with a musical theme that encompasses a scene. So, you know, it can be anywhere from 10 seconds to 2 minutes, or just depends on what the scene is like, and try to evoke the emotion, basically complement what's happening, and it once in a while bring out little movements that are in there.
Tell me the instrumentation. What instruments do you use in the whole show?
Well, I play in this show. I start on kazoo and ukulele, and then I move to acoustic guitar. Then I move to banjo, and that's mostly what I play until the very end. The last 15 minutes, I play viola all through that, and then maybe some sound effects too.
I'm pretty much just accordion. I do play kazoo at one point. Of course, the glockenspiel. Oh. Right. Sorry, I got stuck in another.
You have to put down the accordion.
I have to contort myself around it because there's no time to take it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of room for the accordion and the glockenspiel.
We've got it set up. Actually, it's quite great. We set the glockenspiel on a chair. Attached to that is the water sound effect. And we've got everything set up in just a certain manner. But mainly I'm on accordion in this one.
Dave Keenan and Nova Devaney, also known as Miles and Karina, they've composed and they will perform a live soundtrack to Steamboat Bill Jr., starring the wonderful Buster Keaton, Saturday, the 22nd of September, at 3:15 in the Rose Theater as part of the Port Townsend Film Festival 2018. And make sure to tune in Friday night, the 21st, from 5 to 7 p.m., on KPTZ, where we'll have our traditional opening night live from the film festival on Taylor Street. And if you're down there, come by and see us in the front office of Gooding O'Hara and Mackey, the accounting office in the corner of Taylor and Washington. We love to say hi to our listeners who come by and watch the process of doing a live remote broadcast. That's Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. Enjoy the festival.